that lurks within. Smiling faces, sometimes they don't tell the truth. Smiling faces, tell lies, and I got proof.
song, I know some of you kids know. And I want you to sing it with me, okay? Can you be my background singers? It's really easy because it's just oh, 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 oh. Okay? You got to get it. Okay. We're going to try this song and you're going to be my background singers. Okay. Let's do it.
Ain't ever wondered if trying to make it real compared to what.
Yes, it is all right. After all, it's live radio. It's all I can tell you. It's live radio. For our listeners that have hung in there, and I know we've had some ups and downs in this last half an hour, but we're here back live on Progressive News Weekly. Welcome back. My name is Daryl Clark. For those of you who are just tuning in, and I'm your host, a week in and week out. You're at the right place, and you're definitely at the right time. We are going to get right into our next special guest, which is a returning guest, actually. And as we promised, and we always at least attempt to keep our promises, we were going to have this gentleman back this week, because what he has to share is truly, truly very, very important. And so returning is Mr. George E. Garza from the Left Forum Conference. And George is going to just share with us some of this very, very special conference. For those who missed it last week and for those who caught it last week, to reiterate what's happening this weekend. George is a coordinator for the Left Forum Conference. It is literally the largest conference of its kind in America. The conference has over 400 panels and speakers from all over the world, all discussing human rights. And so without further ado, I want to bring Mr. George E. Garza to the airwaves to tell us a little bit about it. We only have a few minutes with Mr. E. Garza, and so let's get right to it. George, welcome back to Progressive News Weekly.
How are you doing, Daryl? Thanks for having me on again. Glad to be here with you. Glad to share some insights and developments in the progress for the Left Forum Conference, which we're opening the doors tomorrow at 3 p.m. Registration starts.
So, again, for those who missed last week or need to get it reinforced, tell us about this largest conference of its kind on civil and human rights and the uniqueness of it, because it is a global conference, in effect.
Yeah, I think that's the key word, Daryl, uniqueness. This conference has a long, very storied history dating back to the 60s, coming out of the Socialist Scholars Conference and emerging in 2004. So we're going into our 11th year, with each year we're bringing in new elements, growing in space, growing in attendance, and growing in reputation. We're anticipating over 4,000 attendance this year. We have over 400 panels. We have over 1,200 speakers at this event, which is culminating after a long year's hard work from dedicated volunteers, activists, scholars, allies, a wonderful array of people coming from all walks of life, various backgrounds and experiences. This year, as I said, we're having a lot of panels, over 60 per session. The information can be found at leftforum.org. That's leftforum.org. Our schedule for the event can be found at leftforum.org/2015/schedule. This is the largest convergence of the left, not only in North America, but one of the largest in the world, bringing in the vast spectrum of the left, from anarchists, environmentalists, communists, socialists, progressive Democrats, you name it, and they've either been or will be or are at this year's conference.
Let's share with us some of the previous guests that have been over the last 3 or 4 years to give us an example.
So we've been very fortunate to have held talks and discussions with a multitude of speakers from well-known names such as Noam Chomsky, Angela Davis, Harry Belafonte, Arundhati Roy, Christopher Hedges, you name it, from journalists to activists to authors, Jeremy Scahill, Amy Goodman's been there the past couple years, to delegations and politicians across the globe. This weekend on Saturday at a lunchtime event, distinguished Professor Stanley Aronowitz is going to be in conversation with the Venezuelan delegation, which is going to include a lot of prominent people from within the Venezuelan government to talk about, you know, the growth in electoral radical electoral politics, the shift in not only Venezuela but also in Europe, which are opening plenary on Friday, tomorrow, will feature Syriza and Podemos representatives and researchers talking and discussing a new left bloc emerging out of these new elections in Europe.
Wow. You know, I think back in terms of previous guests, in addition to what you said, remember Jesse, I saw Jesse Jackson, Cornel West, just such a wide array of speakers. And so it's a not what to miss type of an event. I'm going to have to, as we said last week, connect you with some of my guests, because I'm sure a number of them, in fact, our next guest here is going to come up in a minute, would probably be an excellent candidate. She's written several books, but we'll talk later on that. The website, one more time, what's the website?
The website is www.leftforum.org. There you can find the schedule of panels. You can find volunteer opportunities to attend the conference for free, because we do allow free admission for those who volunteer at the conference. Also, on that topic, we also have free admission for high school students who will register on the site and present a high school ID at the conference. We have various reduced admissions. We have scholarships available. So this year we're also providing free childcare. The space is limited, so we do ask people to register on the website. Because in the past we've inadvertently kept out some people who had those, you know, domestic obligations and had to attend to household duties. And, you know, because in the past it was really difficult to cross these hurdles, these bureaucratic, financial, and spatial hurdles of acquiring a space, acquiring the right people to provide this very important job of childcare. But this year we were fortunate enough to be able to provide it for free at the conference. With that in mind, you know, we're anticipating a large attendance, not only from youth, but those people who in the past maybe couldn't attend because of the lack of childcare. But now we feel like we've opened up the space for even a larger audience than before.
Fantastic. Well, I know I'm looking forward to being there. I thank you for taking the time, because I know at this point you've got to be swarmed with activities right now, getting all prepped there tomorrow. So I truly, truly appreciate, you taking the time out. Give a shout out to Seth, the founder and one of the coordinators of the event. He's been on over the last several years promoting the event as well. And, good for you for doing the good work that you're doing as well, George. Any last words before we let you get back to work?
We're just hoping everyone that is able to come out to the conference to really have a good time, enjoy themselves, take the opportunity to network and, reach across the spectrum, alongside the spectrum of the left, connect with various groups and organizations as we combat these institutions of oppression that hold back a number of us. And, you know, as we are all united in this struggle for a more radical change, a more radical transformation of our situation. Again, the website is www.leftforum.org. We're hoping for a great conference, and I hope to see everyone there.
Well, thank you again. We've been talking with Mr. George Igarza of the Left Forum, one of the coordinators of the forum. And this is the weekend that we've been anticipating for this event, one of the largest in America, one of the largest in the world in terms of civil and human rights activities. And it is not just a hearing, but these are action-oriented panels. So they're discussing things that, you know, we can get involved with to make a difference. And that's what I really love about that format. It talks about solidarity as well, and those of like minds coming together to make a difference. So let me let you get going, George, and I definitely appreciate it. Looking forward to seeing you.
Yeah, thank you, Daryl, and I hope to catch you there.
All right, then. You take care.
Bye. You too. Bye.
All right. So I just wanted to have a little impromptu piece by George. Now, for what you all have been waiting for, we have, well, for those of you on the mail list, and I know a number of you have received it, looking forward to him returning, we have the one and only Dr. Eddie Taylor. Now, let me explain, because you can see we're in the last quarter of the program. This is going to be a two-program event here, and I'm saying it is an event, because we're going to get into the research behind what significantly is degrading African-American progress. And a significant amount of that degradation and regression is due to, well, African-Americans. And that, as we've heard the saying go, crab in the barrel mentality. So Dr. Taylor is literally going to work with us, the listeners, in almost a workshop mode. And I'm going to recommend that everyone within an earshot, and I'm not trying to just promote a book. I've looked at this, and it's a quick read, which I love about it. His previous book, Restoring the Minds of Black America, was a little bit more in-depth. But we're not even talking 60 pages, folks. And yet it really touches the heart of what is plaguing Black America. And so it's not just a read for Black America, in fact. So in preparation for next week, I really want to encourage everyone to go out and pick up the book so we can have intelligent dialogue. The title of the book is The Day the Crab Got Out, The Revival of Black America by Dr. Eddie Taylor. You can go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble. You can go to Dr. Taylor's website, www.eddietaylorphd.com. But let's make this happen, especially my educators out there in the listening audience and those who influence young adults and children. It would be very important that we do this. So, yeah, we have a very limited time. So we're just going to kind of high level with Dr. Taylor right now. And in fact, I'm going to go on a quick aside to get started with Dr. Taylor about some things that really concern me locally with that crabs in the barrel issue. Even just today, I'm trying to get out of my office to begin our program. And I had a scenario where a coworker, you know, sent me some information that was just disparaging with regard to some work I do in the community. And it was just so unfounded, and it was obviously politically grounded as we're getting ready to go into elections this upcoming week here in this town where I'm at in about 2 or 3 days. And there's been a lot of smearing. I don't do politics, and some people love that and some people don't, because I'm active and they want me on one side or the other or one of the three sides. But I don't do that. I don't play those games. I'm led by the character of the content, not by the label of the organization. So, yeah, I ran into that, so I had to respond to that, and that was time-consuming, and it's energy. It's not only bad energy, but it's wasted energy. And we, and I'm speaking from an African-American's perspective and from a human perspective, don't have time for wasted energy. So, again, pick up the book, and we're going to start out with, you know, what is this barrel, you know, that we're talking about? You heard the crabs in the barrel. And then when we come back next week, we're going to get into some more detail as such as, you know, how did African-Americans get in the condition? You know, how did the crab get in the barrel, as Dr. Taylor said? I got to bring him on right now. Dr. Taylor, welcome to another edition. He's truly a friend of Progressive News Weekly. Welcome to another edition of Progressive News Weekly, and thank you for your patience. And we had a little few technical difficulties, but you know how we work. You've been on for many years. We don't shortchange key, critical, important topics. So if we have to go three programs and make this into a series, we'll do what we need to do because this is important information. Dr. Taylor, welcome to Progressive News Weekly.
Dare Clark, thank you so much for having me back on the show. I really appreciate your show. I really appreciate what you're doing and also the contribution from your listeners. So I'm very thankful to be here.
Well, it's truly, truly a pleasure. I was listening, I was up on the web a few days back, and I saw that wonderful interview you did on one of the news programs. I don't know if it was Fox or CBS, but well done. But the only problem I had with it, Dr. Taylor, I think it was an eight-minute interview, and that's why we're here, for individuals like yourself, because it was just too short. I mean, you had just enough time to talk about the root of the title.
Right.
And I was salivating, and, you know, but that's mainstream media. But I'm happy for you that you did at least be able to reach across for those that know there was a lot more behind that tip of the iceberg in terms of the, you know, tens of thousands or millions of people that you had the exposure to, and I'm sure and hope that a number of them did see through that so abbreviated interview. That should have been a segment in itself. But, you know, this concept, you heard me mention myself, and that was just one incident. I'm trying to get out and do something progressive this evening, and as I might wind up my day, I get this crazy call about, did you hear somebody said this about you? And it turns out it's a black source and one of the politicians in town who may feel threatened, and I don't even do politics.
Right.
I don't know and don't care what the source was, but it was back to that black on black. I mean, I'm really trying to do something progressive, and you have these individuals who can't see past their nose, despite their face,
mm-hmm.
as saying. Now, is that part of the crux of what you talk about in your book? In game, I should say, because you get into the core of it and the root of it, but at the surface of it, is that some of what led you to this? Because I know every colleague I know have run into this. I've had people tell me, I've worked 30 years in a corporation. The worst scenarios
mm-hmm.
I've had, and these are African Americans, have been by my black bosses. You know,
right?
Mm-hmm. Talk with us. Let me let the mic turn over to you.
Yeah, so that's one of the things that I looked at within the book, you know, and I would always hear, you know, there's crabs in the barrel, you know, it's crabs in the barrel. And so every time that one of us would be successful, we'd have someone else pulling us down one way or another. So I really wanted to understand that. But what I wanted to do in the book, I wanted to, so the first part of the book looks at what the barrel is, you know, it's a metaphor. And so I look at the barrel metaphorically to understand that it's not being in a literal barrel, it's not being in a literal location, but it's a metaphor, and to understand that. And so I open the book up looking at that, and then I look at, after I look at the barrel, then I look at how do we get in the barrel? What was it that caused us to have that type of mentality? And so the crabs in the barrel is a mentality. It's a way that we exist. It's a way that we see things. It's a way that we comprehend certain things. It's the way that we receive certain things within our community, within ourselves, within each other. So I looked at that as well. And the first part of the book deals with that. And then the next part of the book deals with, well, how do we get out of this situation? You know, what is the solution? You know, what is the resolve? And so the book opens up basically to let us know our condition. And let us know that the way we act and the way that we behave, the way that we treat each other, is a conditioned reaction. If you ever, you know, and most people study the basics of psychology with the rat and the maze, and they go and they push a certain level, and then a pellet comes out, or a pellet comes out. And so the same thing happens to us. We were conditioned to do certain things so we can get certain reactions or certain responses. And that's what goes on in our community. We were conditioned to react and to respond to each other in a certain way. However, the so-called benefits that we would receive during the slave-making days are no longer there. But because we've been so successfully conditioned, they no longer have to, as someone once said, put chains around us to make us do certain things and go certain places. We've been successfully conditioned, some of us have been successfully conditioned to react and to live and to treat each other in these prescribed ways.
Let me ask something on that note. You said the benefit is gone since slavery.
Correct.
Is it totally gone? Now, first, let me rewind just a bit. I take it that when you say the benefit, let me take it back another step behind the benefit. When you say we're being conditioned for this behavior, okay, in other words, going back to slavery, we were bred to behave that way, to not trust each other, to undermine one another. Is that what you're saying so far?
Yeah.
Good. Uh-huh. Okay. So now you're saying, so make sure everyone on the line is listening, understands that. So now you say, now the interesting part is the benefit of that behavior is gone, but yet we continue the behavior. So as you know how I am, and we love each other this way, I challenge you to say, is the benefit gone, Dr. Taylor? Is it really gone?
So,
because I'm wondering if people, maybe it is gone, and that's not rhetorical. I mean, it's literally a question, because maybe the perception of the benefit is not gone, but the real benefit is gone. But something in there I'm questioning may not be gone, and maybe it's just the perception that's not really gone, but the actual benefit is. And I'm only saying that because, as an example, I think when people do the things they do, or organizations do what they do, or entertainers who have a strong influence to make a difference don't do what they could do to make a difference, because it's not always what you do, it's sometimes what you don't do that can undermine a fellow brother or sister, then I would say they are doing that with the perception that they're getting something out of it. So
true? Absolutely. So what happens, a perception is, so for example, if you go to a restaurant, a very fine restaurant, and you order some food, and if you get a perception of the meal, the dinner, it's not going to do anything for you to have a perception. You need to have the real meal. So, of course, the perception is there, the perception of a benefit, the perception of these privileges will be there. But the real thing is no longer there. They have to put the thing there initially to condition the mind. So, for example, in slavery, in order for us to be enslaved, the slave traders could not successfully obtain Africans. It's impossible. It was impossible for the Spaniards, for the queen to send her Spaniard slave traders to Africa to obtain the Africans. So what they had to do, they had to condition the minds of the Africans to work with them and to work for them. And that's how it happened. They conditioned the mind, so they would receive maybe alcohol, they may receive some tobacco, they may receive something, some benefits for the privilege of turning us in to be sold into the transatlantic slave system.
Is that the fact of the matter?
To turn against each other?
That example, well, some of, or one of those examples that you gave, you know, alcohol or food or something, is that the fact of the matter that they actually enticed Africans to do that? And so I'm just asking that for our listeners.
Yes, and that's historically documented. When they first went over to get the Africans, because our people, if you know our people, we're so protective of us, you know, and we see that every time that someone is being harassed by the police, harassed by the media, we would usually stand up together. You know, when you look at, go back to O.J. Simpson, you look at what they did to Michael Jackson, you know, all of these, although they may not have stood with us, but the moment they become attacked, we all rise up together. And so when these slave traders went over to Africa, they were, some of them were murdered, some of them were beat, but they were basically chased back to Spain, chased back to Europe. And then they had this different plan to get the Africans to work for them and to work with them, which is what happens in our community today. And so now, you know, the Klan, they don't drive by and shoot up our homes like they used to. You know, they don't attack our women like they used to. They don't destroy our community like they used to. We've been so conditioned that we do it for them.
Wow, that's deep. Okay. You know, that's when we're going to really peel back the onion on what you just said, is the Klan is still active.
Uh-huh.
They're operating in a different fashion.
Right.
Is that your assertion? That makes some sense. Is that your assertion, Dr. Taylor, that actually what we see is part of the conditioning that's happening in our streets? I mean, I've always thought that this is no coincidence here, what's happening. I mean, coincidence, what we see on television, when we see ourselves in a subservient or comedic or criminal type of an image on television, and of course, as you know, I was just saying about your interview, you know, the TV media, it's powerful. You're not talking about 1,000 or 5,000. You're talking about influencing millions at a time.
Right.
And so it's no coincidence what we're seeing of ourselves, even though it's interesting that blacks are playing those roles. And there are some that would say, well, these blacks are getting paid. What's your take on that?
Well, for the blacks are getting paid, they're getting paid to play a certain role. And so what happens, in order to fulfill a certain thing, they have to feel that they are benefiting. But what happens, the benefit is actually counterproductive. The more that they can,
Hello?
The more that they condemn the community, they condemn themselves. And so we see this over and over again. Those who are, you know, we have some who become millionaires, but they become millionaires at the expense of themselves, their family, and the community. And so that cycle just continues. It's a very vicious cycle that continues.
So black millionaires become that at the expense, really, of their own well-being from a broader perspective. They may feel as though they themselves are living the good life, but if they pull back the lens and look at the big picture and the influence that they're having, such as, you know, some of the entertainers, some of the rappers, if you will, who are making out, you know, millions and millions of dollars and driving Bentleys, the impact, the influence that they're having, it seems like a very simple shell game that's being played, or the Roach Motel, if you will, which I call it. You know, you give one something that they perceive as being good, and they take that poison out into the community and poison millions.
Right.
And that's,
so,
that's
you know,
the,
I, Yeah, I look at that, and then I look at, you know, the way that it is, the way that that whole crab mentality, that barrel mentality is perceived, is that those who, metaphorically speaking, who are outside of the barrel, looks at the crabs in the barrel and believe that the crabs want to be in the barrel. So when you see the condition, you know, when you see the morbid condition of some of our communities, there are some individuals who are outside of our community. They have the, somehow they have the understanding that we like to live that way, that we like to have, we like to be miseducated. We like to live in horrible communities. We like to live in communities that are filled with abandoned buildings. And so outside of the barrel, individuals look inside and say, these people like to live that way. And then, unfortunately, some of us who are in the barrel think that that's how we ought to live. And so here's what some say. When I finally graduate or when I get my job, I'm going to move into, someone say, a white neighborhood, a mixed neighborhood. But no one ever says a black neighborhood, because the idea for some is that the black neighborhood is that deplorable condition, because the mind is somehow conditioned to believe that the barrel is where black people live.
Oh, yeah, that's a double negative.
Mm-hmm.
So now let me ask, those in the barrel in this particular case,
mm-hmm.
those are those that we're speaking of when you subtitle your book, The Revival of Black America. We're talking basically Black America, generally speaking,
yeah.
Right? Across all genders, all within the Black American race, across all
uh-huh.
genders, across all races, and across all social and economic status as well. Is that
yeah.
the case for those
yeah.
African Americans in
yeah.
the barrel?
So it's about all of Black America. However, those who are in the barrel, it's not 100% of Black America in the barrel. There's a large number that's in the barrel. And so that barrel mentality, the barrel mentality is the mentality that says that, we don't have anything because we're not supposed to have anything and we'll never have anything. Our communities are horrible because that's how black communities are. We don't have good education because we're not supposed to be educated. We can't be educated. We have all the negative things in life because we're supposed to have all the negative things in life. That's the barrel mentality. The barrel mentality is the one who says, I wish I was something other than who I am. That's the barrel mentality.
Mm.
There are so many of us within the black community who have lost the barrel mentality, and that's what the other part of the book talks about. It talks about individuals from during slavery, during the 1700s, the 1800s, and then after slavery in the 1900s, that have worked to help our people to eliminate that type of mental conditioning. And they've been very successful at doing it.
I'm not sure I follow that. Elaborate on that one, please. What do you mean by that?
So, for example, in the book I talk about the role of the Prince Hall Masons.
Okay.
And I mentioned how the Prince Hall Masons in the 1700s, Prince Hall and the other Masons who were with him, they did everything they could to help improve the condition of black America. They started schools for black America. They approached the president, even before he was a president. They approached George Washington. They approached the House of Representatives of Massachusetts. They approached our congressmen. They approached government officials to, first of all, free the slaves, free the Africans, because it was inhumane for them to be treated and live the way that they were living. So the Prince Hall Freemasons were actively involved in eliminating that barrel mentality. So there are some, and there were some back then, who were connected with the Prince Hall Freemasons who didn't think that way. They thought very highly of the fact that they were African. They thought very highly of the fact that their skin was full of melanin. They thought very highly of the fact of their ancestral heritage, of where they've come from and where they were. And so this was a message that Prince Hall and the Masons spread throughout the black community. And those who accepted the message that Prince Hall and his, and the others gave did not have that barrel mentality.
Mm. Okay, even though they were in the barrel? Or
No. The barrel mentality, it's a metaphor. Being in the barrel is a metaphor. When you have that mentality, that means that you're in the barrel. When you no longer have that mentality, you can't even stay in the barrel. The barrel is not made for you. The barrel is made for those who are defeated, self-defeated. When you're self-defeated and you feel like you have no purpose, no reason, and you have no value, you're made for the barrel. You have that mentality. And so in order to free the minds from that barrel mentality, Prince Hall and the Prince Hall Masons had began to educate our people and to approach the government on behalf of our people to give our people opportunities that every American citizen has.
I notice in your book you say that the barrel symbolizes conditions, education, economics, and so forth. So it's, as you said, a metaphor symbolizing certain conditions. And when those conditions are accepted, then you are automatically within that barrel. If you accept the conditions of that metaphor of a barrel, then you are in the barrel. Now, is it possible, accept those conditions? And as you said at the top of your interview, you're trying to move ahead progressively, and others are trying to pull you down because of their mindset. In this metaphor, this is going to lead into our next interview because we have about 2 more minutes. In that metaphor, is that person in the barrel? Let's use me. I'm trying to think progressively. I don't think in terms of that's just the way it is. I try to think progressively, but yet I'm in an environment where those around me, and I'm not saying speaking in absolutes, but there are a significant number around me that I may have to interface with, whether it's work or in the community, just from the proximity of living around them, that will try to disparage my name for no good reason, or they see me doing progressive things, try to counter that. And then I'm not just, being paranoid. I'm speaking, based on, factual occurrences. Now, does that mean I'm in that metaphoric barrel, or because I'm in that environment, or is it that they're in the barrel and side the barrel? How does that work? And that's one that we're going to lead into our next segment next week.
That's good. I would say that your mental conditioning determines whether or not you go back in the barrel or get out of the barrel. It's up to you. No one can control how you think. No one can control how you think. They can only lead you to think a certain way. But no one can control your thoughts. No one can control how you think. No one can control how you react. All that's left up to you.
So, question, that said, would, use me as an example, I be considered in that barrel? Would I be considered in that barrel? Would that be determined by the, because you say the barrel is the environment as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's education, it's economic, those conditions.
Right.
I find myself in those, you know, educational conditions. We're in a town that has one of the, and I'm just using this as an example, I'm not saying that that's the case, or a person is in a town that has poor education. The town is being looked at to be taken over by the state. Again, I'm not saying this town, but just as an example, that's an environment. Are they, that individual considered, are those individuals considered to be in that barrel?
Yes, they're considered to be in that barrel when they believe that that's where they belong. When they believe that's where they belong and they do nothing about it, then they have a barrel mentality.
Ah, now those are two different things. If you believe that's where you belong, and then you said if you do nothing about it, because
right.
you can, and I, you can not believe that that's where you believe, where you belong. I mean, you can truly be adamant, this is not me. I don't belong here. But then you do nothing about it. So where
right.
does that
and if you do nothing
back?
About it, oh. yeah. Yeah, I refer to that as the Uncle Tom disorder. You know, if you were familiar with Uncle Tom, Uncle Tom was beaten as a slave, but Uncle Tom felt that, well, you know, that's what he get. You know, he really didn't fight against it. He didn't try to get escape. He didn't fight back. He just accepted it. And so the Uncle Tom disorder says, you know, well, this is the education they've given me, and apparently this is the only education that I deserve.
Let's pick up on the Uncle Tom disorder on our next segment. I am looking so forward to this. I really want to drill down into this area because I believe, Dr. Taylor, I really believe you've hit something with this one, something that hasn't been touched enough. And I'm just speaking. I'm not trying to patronize you. I'm too old to play those games. I don't do that. And as you know, I'll challenge you.
Right.
But I believe that there's something here that we need to look at in some depth. So much time as you have, I want to really do some work with this one with our listeners and really try to get folks on board with this, especially our educators. So for listeners, I know we didn't take calls today. I know that there's a comment. I can't get around the one comment because my engineer, and when you get my engineer excited, I'm not trying to, but I think he's borderline brilliant. And don't you get the big head, Cecil, but you're a wise dude. He has a question for you. But we can't take questions broadly, but next week, and the announcement's going to go out over the weekend, so, you know, plenty of folks will have time to share with other folks, get on board with this. Go get the book, The Day the Craps Got Out, The Revival of Black America. It's a short read, small book, but very impactful. Dr. Eddie Taylor. So as we close, I want to bring on Cecil McDaniel because that's our engineer, and he has a question for you. Be aware, he's sharp, Dr. Taylor. You know Cecil.
Yeah.
Cecil, what do you got for us?
When someone is perceived to be in the words of the Bible, first of all, hi, Dr. Taylor, how are you?
I'm well, sir. Good to hear from you.
Great. Good to hear you, and good to have you on the show again. My question is that old adage from the Bible, which says being in the world but not of the world. With that person who is in the world, not of the world, be a crab in the barrel, or would it not be a crab in the barrel? And if not, would it be an example of one who does not prescribe to, this is what I belong, this is where I belong, this is what I deserve this, et cetera, et cetera.
Right, so you're saying that someone goes into the community?
So say, for instance, go to the community. You get educated and all of this, and instead of moving out of the community, you decide that I'm going to stay in this community and I'm going to build my community up.
Uh-huh.
Would you be one considered to be in the world but not necessarily of the world?
Yes, I would say that, and I think that's a good analogy of it, because and then basically, as I mentioned before, that it's a mentality. It's not a geographical location. So you can be in the same community, but your mind, the way you've been conditioned, the way your mind is, will determine whether or not you're in the barrel or not.
Right.
I get it now. It's seepy. Yeah. So you can be, well, Cecil, great example, in that environment, but not of that environment, and therefore you're not in the barrel.
Right, absolutely. Absolutely. And you have so many situations like that. You know, I mentioned earlier about Prince Hall and the Prince Hall affiliated Masons, how they would go in the community. They would establish schools in the community. They would establish programs in the community. But their minds, mentally, they did not have the barrel mentality. They were actually pulling people out of the barrel.
There you go. There's the catch. You're pulling people out of the barrel. If you're not in the barrel and you're not helping to pull people out of the barrel, then in effect you may actually be in the barrel and
right.
not know it.
Right. That's right, and not know it.
And then another part of that was, and I've noticed this about certain fraternities here of late, where they say, well, this one, that one, that one, that one, they deserve to be out of the barrel. The rest of you deserve to be in the barrel. In essence, are they not still in the barrel?
That's another core part of my book, what I deal with, because in the 1900s, the fraternities and the sororities were actively involved in getting the black community out of the barrel.
Right.
However, what we have today is individuals who do not know what their fraternities and sororities are about. They're just in them for whatever benefits they think they can get out of them, and they're not aware of the work that goes along with it. And so I do talk about it. That's that revival part. When I say the revival of Black America, the fraternities and sororities need to be revived. And then when the fraternities and sororities... Sir?
They seem to have slipped into this mentality or mindset where they think that I've arrived and I deserve to be here, and you do not. And my role as a member of this fraternity is to actually help to keep you down. You know, I notice certain men in fraternities that I work with, a lot of business organizations, business development organizations in my city and across the country, in fact, around the world.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things that I've noticed when I run into certain groups of people, they will only help or assist their frat brother or sorority sister,
right.
While at the same time not helping the other guy because he's not my frat brother, she's not my sorority, and that kind
right.
of thing. They don't understand that you are then, in essence, still in the barrel because that you're still pulling others back down into the barrel. You think because you got millions and somebody's paying you to do this from the inside that you are actually not in the barrel, but you're in it and don't even realize it.
Right. And then, you know, one of the things with the fraternities and sororities who are conditioned to have that mindset, that barrel mentality, is that they do not realize that they are the way out. They're the way out of the barrel. If they continue to think that, you know, I'm better than everyone else, then we will stay in the barrel. Every fraternity and sorority, they're all distinct. They all have unique features. They all have things that help the community in different ways. And as long as they forget that, we will remain in the condition that we're in. You know, we can march, we can protest, we can do a lot of things, but we already have everything that we need in place. We just need to revive it.
And I guess when we come back next week, we can look at, taking with one hand or giving with one hand and taking back with the other. Notice people making big contributions to this or that community effort, or, and they'll do this huge campaign in the public so that you can see them doing this and that and the other. But they are still the same ones who are contributing to the mental degradation and erosion of the family unit, et cetera, et cetera. Prime example, one of the worst things, the shows, and I used to get up and leave the room every time it came on, so glad that it stopped coming on, was that, what was that thing that was just on Empire? Instead of showing our people positively how to create empires, every negative stereotype of an African-American male or female that could have been utilized was packed into that one show. Even so much so that the creators of that show and the founders of that show said, this show will be brought to you with limited commercial interruption, because they knew that the spell that they were casting on people would be interrupted if they broke for commercial. So they did this show here with limited commercial interruption. In other words, we don't care about making the money from our sponsors right now. We're going to do far better if we can push this or drive these new ideologies home that we want to drive into the minds of these people. That was one of the few times that I had seen a show offered on the air with limited or no commercial interruption. And you say, why would they not break for commercial? We don't want to break our spell. We're casting a spell on you, and we can't risk this hypnotic trance that we're putting you in by breaking for something as menial as a $1 million or multi-million-dollar commercial. We don't want that. We want you, because you're going to bring us billions and even trillions. You don't know it, but we won't be breaking for commercial. But that was, to me, one of the most horrible shows they could have put on TV. There are some other ones, but I won't name them right now.
Well, you know, to me, that ties back to they found the poison. See, the poison to me was music, but, you know, we're getting off on another, you know, segment, but to me, I think one of the poisons, there's a lot of them. Of course, you got drugs and sex and that, which also is being proliferated across the media, because the media is the source. You know, that's not the source. That's the means of infusing the poison. But one of the main poisons, I think, that came out, ironically, because it's the music that helped free us, that helped us get through those tough times. You know, no coincidence that many of our great artists, you know, die early. I think, you know, there's the accusation that B.B. King was killed. You know, I mean, it makes you wonder. The great artists, Grover Washington, B.B. King just passed. You know, the greats, Luther Vandross. You know, the greats seem to go early, and I just don't think it's coincidence. And I'm not being paranoid, but now you see it's being replaced with what? Degradation, and then what's the ultimate of that? It's already big enough that the music that gets played across the airwaves of terrestrial radio is you know enough to just infuse that in the community. Why not take it to that next level, the mass media television? And that's what I believe Cecil was talking about. When you get there, and it's at a point where it is almost addictive. I've heard in the supermarket, banks, post office, you know, did you see the last episode of Empire? Instead of saying, did you hear about that brother, the latest one that got shot in New York? Or did you hear about what they did in Cleveland, 147 shots on the hood of the car, and they got off? And I'm hearing these folks in the bank talking about Empire. So I think that is one of the great poisons that the adversary has put in terms of condition. I just wanted to take a coattail off of Cecil on that one. But that, with that said, I think that, there's so much to be said about what you're bringing, Dr. Taylor. I appreciate it. I'm encouraged with what we're getting ready to bring with this series that you brought to us. Yeah, thank you.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
We've been talking, for those of you who joined us late, we've been talking with
the one and only Dr. Eddie Taylor, author. He also holds 2 degrees, 2 masters, and a PhD in psychology. He's an educator, he's a humanitarian, and he's a crusader for human and civil rights, and he speaks truth to power. His latest book, The Day the Crabs Got Out, The Revival of Black America, I encourage you all to go out and get. His previous book, and don't miss that one, Restoring the Minds of Black America. You can get his book just about everywhere where you can buy books, but Barnes & Noble, you can go to Amazon, you can go to his website, EddieTaylorPhD.com. And if you have an opportunity to engage Dr. Taylor, I advise you to do so. I'm sure you can get to you through your website, Dr. Taylor?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, at my website at www.eddietaylorphd.com. And there's also an email address and then a contact link on there as well.
All right. So there's your contact information, folks. So with that said, again, we thank you. I believe a change is going to come through work like yours. It's the great Sam Cooke. The great Sam Cooke said, you know, change is going to come, and I thank you, Dr. Taylor. So for those listeners, we thank you. Also, thanks to my partner, Cecil. Tell someone about Progressive News Weekly, and remember, the archives are there once the program is over, so you can go back and you can tune in. And, yeah, we did have some difficulties in the beginning, but we don't shuck and jive here. We're going to bring it strong, no chaser, next week with Dr. Eddie Taylor at the top. So long, folks. Enjoy your weekend.
Good night. But he wants.